got the blues from the baby left me by the San Francisco Bay. Said I got the blues from the baby left me by the San Francisco Bay. Cisco Bay. And there was nothing I could do or say. Or just hang my head, slowly walk away. Hey, hey. Well, so long, pretty baby.
Do you find early mornings a drag? Is your morning coffee fix just not enough? Then it's time to get up to get down. Check out Moving in the Right Direction Radio every Thursday morning between 6 and 9 a.m. Join thousands gathered around the radio. Your programmer, host, and DJ, David James, will deliver the finest in underground electronic music and beyond. Moving in the Right Direction will bring you guest DJ sets from local heroes and the international jet set, along with interviews with both local and international producers. So tune in and move in the right direction.
You can listen to CIUT five different ways. Online, on satellite TV, digital cable, on FM radio, and on the go. Find CIUT online at iTunes Radio under Campus University, or go to the live stream at www.ciut.fm. You can also locate us on satellite at Star Choice Channel 826, Rogers Digital Cable Channel 946, and Bell 5 Channel 970. Listen to us on the go with TuneIn Radio's free app. And don't forget, we're on the FM dial at 89.5 FM. Spread the word. The evolution continues. CIUT 89.5 FM.
Welcome to Evidence here on CIUT 89.5 FM. I'm Ted Fox. Coming up, we'll be talking to Gadfly on TUID's Festival of Urban Dance Culture. Following that, holistic psychotherapist and educator Melanie Rosen. But first off, Heidi Strauss, Artistic Director of Adelheid Dance Projects, and she's here on the world premiere of Elsewhere, a Dance Works presentation running September 25th to 27th at Harborfront Center Theater. And if you don't recognize the name, which I didn't at first, it's the former N-Wave. Mm-hmm. So something corporate went on there, right?
Well, I think they're looking for new sponsorship for the theater.
Yeah. Okay. Adelheid, when you formed that dance, why did you call it that, number one? Number two, when you formed it, what were you thinking you were wanting to do with dance projects?
I think Adelheid formed as a response to the amount of work we were really doing. The collaborator I was working with at the time, and I'm still working with, who's also my husband, Jeremy Memna, and we were in residence for a number of years, for 4 years, at the Factory Theater, and we were doing a number of projects and felt the need to kind of formalize a structure under which to work, or within which to work. And the name came from the actual, like, old German root of my own name, Heidi. And it means the shape of noble intent, Adelheid. So if movement has a shape and a definition and a direction, I thought that perhaps my name had something to do with that. So, or over time, my name has become involved in those kind of aspects of movement and defining things.
Mm-hmm. Well, the shape and intent, because I've seen many of your pieces, mm-hmm. seem to come from within. So the movement is shaped by you, whatever it is, who you are, the real person coming out and exploring the space around you.
I hope so. That's nice to hear. That's how I intend or am interested in working. So often I work, like, with my own sort of movement vocabulary, but then really take the opportunity to listen to what's happening with the people that I'm working with and what they bring to a process and what they propose and how they propose things that I could never propose, and mm-hmm. how it's important to be as much a doer as a listener.
Well, how's the listening, say, in Still Here, when you're a soloist looking and just yourself there and working with an ensemble like you are now, how does that process work? And let's talk about elsewhere then.
I think it's interesting to talk about the difference between the solo work and the communication and the way of listening is also you, as a performer, of course, you listen to what's happening with you as you're doing things, but you also have the responsibility in a way to be really listening to the audience and how they're responding to what's happening. And with the solo work and a lot of the other small group works I've done, I've been interested in how proximate the audience could be to the performance itself as a way to also be a better listener to what's happening in the audience and with the audience and the interaction that is tacit but is often very full and can be very sort of thick in the space if things are going well, and also if things are not going so well, but that there's a listening that is necessary in any kind of communication, and as in a performance, in any kind of performance, I think that it does exist. And taking that into a larger group work, the idea of really listening to each other within the piece. So the performers interact a lot, and some of the choreography is quite set and some is quite structured and some of it is quite improvised. And so there's really, it's really necessary to really be in the moment with each other and to be attending to what's really happening in the room on the stage, in the room with the audience, in that kind of totality.
Well, listening to yourself in the moment, you also then be very conscious of the functioning of your body, don't you? little things like the heartbeat, the breathing process, and everything like that must be affecting. And then in an ensemble, it's affecting everybody as their own selves.
Exactly.
Different rates, different vibes.
Yeah. And a lot of the choreography is built on the idea of not being in control or not being completely on balance, or so that there's an actual listening to the physicality and how to sort of maintain or survive what the tasks are within it, so that the action of the dancing is really a real falling and recovering without it looking necessarily like anybody's falling, but that there's pathways in the body that you listen to and push further some days and less far other days, and other places where you push further. So the idea of the potential of what can exist between people and also within oneself.
Well, how difficult is it then to become, it's to me, think of multitasking in this context, conscious of the audience's reaction, negative, positive, or responding with their bodies or something. How easy is it to contact with that connection of the vibrations in your own body connection without getting sort of unfocused in some way or other from either?
Well, I think the idea of being open and so that the task of listening to the audience isn't a sort of singular idea, but the task is really being present, or the idea of performance is really about both receiving and giving at the same time. So there being a kind of sense of response, the way that you would involuntarily open a door for somebody, or look before you cross the street, or you know, yawn when you're tired, that there are these things that we do all the time, but we aren't necessarily always directing our consciousness there or being aware that these things are happening. And that's one of the things that the piece kind of looks at, is the moments that are existing and what's actually happening, and that you can't attend to everything in the same moment, but often you can open yourself up in a certain way where you can do, as you said, multitasking, more than one thing at the same time, and that we actually do that in our lives more often than we notice. So.
Okay. I'm interested in the term moment. It comes up a lot on when we're doing interviews here, the moment, being in the moment. And I find that interesting because the moment isn't really there. I mean, as I'm talking, the moments have already gone, and you're not even conscious of the moment that you're in. There is one. So I'm finding it intriguing that isn't it possible to get into the moment?
Because it's
a fraction. It's not even a micro or something.
Being as in it as you
as
possibly can
be.
And also knowing that even if something happens and you are maybe unaware in the moment that it did happen, there's that word again, but anyway, that we accumulate these things and our experiences, and often we don't even know the things that we're carrying around that we could recall or react because of in an instinctual kind of reaction, and that there's sort of this receptacle of behavior and experience in life that we actually carry as a way to respond later in our lives, mm-hmm. and that our behavior is a result of the histories that we've all lived.
Right. And when we experience each other person, there's a delay between the time whatever happened is getting into you to realize, just like the planets out there moving into us.
I suppose, yeah, you could look at it like that.
Light years later. Yeah. You know, so it sort of works the same way, I think, in the bodies. Now, each of the dancers you have, you'll have to mention them a little bit, mm-hmm. Have very strong individual personalities and approaches to their work. So when you're starting this whole process, is improv involved? How do you work then with talk about their background or just allow them to explore themselves, and then you're sort of the overseer on this?
It's a combination of sort of everything, is that we work on particular bits of set movement or interactive exchange, ideas of reaction and response. There's a lot of improvisation, and there's freedom for the dancers to not change necessarily, but really own and refine the way that they're doing things that makes sense for them, mm-hmm. so that the speaking they're doing with their bodies physically is actually something that can belong to them and isn't a sort of particularized physicality or a particularized set mm-hmm. structure.
I'm talking to Heidi Strauss, Artistic Director of Idlehide Dance Projects, on the world premiere of Elsewhere, a DanceWorks presentation running September 25th to 27th at Harborfront Center Theater. We have one pair of tickets to give away for September the 25th. That's Thursday, right, Heidi? Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's a Thursday show. And then I'm going to call 416-946-7000. 946-7000. So if you just call right now, the first caller will win the tickets.
Yay!
Okay, now, your dance piece is always sort of very much a part of Jeremy's score, and I call them soundscapes.
Mm-hmm.
How are you working with him on composing the soundscape for this show?
We've been working on the show for quite a while, so we had a phase of creation for which he did a lot of musical composition. And then after that, we began working on a series of short films that are associated to the production but don't play a role in the production itself.
Mm-hmm.
And then he reworked that music to suit the films, and now the music from the films is being reworked into the stage piece. So there's a lot of interplay and interactivity in the sort of creation process.
Mm-hmm.
And he hasn't spent as much time in the studio with us as he would normally in this last phase, but he's been working consistently with the material each day that is more refined and more heading towards the performance, like what one would see in the performance. And he's also been working on a lot of the projection that is part of the film, too, or part of, no, not the film, part of the stage production.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. The last show I think I saw of yours was TDT, wasn't it? The ensemble one.
Mm-hmm.
And you work a lot with pace, too, like speed, work with more slow, et cetera, and I almost think it like the way the bodies are relating, like atoms colliding at times or moving within themselves, putting it on a more universal note, Heidi.
No, it's
but just an image in my head.
Yeah.
How would you?
I'm interested in speed in the sense of how we identify moments, like important mm-hmm. parts of our lives, as moments that either really slow down or really speed up.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that both of those things you need a great degree of capability and discipline physically to be able to find your way inside of those things. And I also find the changes exciting. And playing with time is something that, in the idea of this carriage of bits and pieces of our own personal histories, mm-hmm. that there's this underlying sense of that within those switches, mm-hmm. and that is also, there is a great deal of that in this piece as well.
Okay.
Of the play with time in the films in particular that aren't part of the piece, but there's mm-hmm. that's one of the conventions we worked with, like, almost primarily.
Okay. Yeah. And what about lighting? And
Lighting, Rebecca Pitcherak is doing the lighting for the work. We just came back from a 5-day residency in Peterborough with Public Energy, where we're going back to perform at the end of the tour, and it was great to be able to have the time there to be integrating the set and the lighting and the projection. And yes, the lighting's, there's a lot of reaction with change in the space with the set and how the interplay of the projection works with that.
Great. Okay, and in addition to this, Grim Pictures, talk a bit about that and short films that you are going to be.
Mm-hmm. So we have a series of films. We have a short film that's 14 minutes long that we just did a kind of avant-première of yesterday in Peterborough. And then there's a series of even shorter, very short, actually like super short films that are...
suitable for subway platforms?
Yeah, eight seconds, 15 seconds, and 30 seconds, different lengths, different sizes and orientations. And those are going to be screened in November through the country at in elevators, in shopping malls, in the subway, in airports, and
you said even high-rise elevators.
Yeah, the way you know how condo towers have those kind televisions in the elevators. So mm-hmm. there's a Pattison One Stop, who runs most of those screens, has agreements to do some not just advertising, but some Canadian content mm-hmm. artwork.
Okay.
So we are one of the projects that they're supporting.
Great. Mm-hmm. Now, Heidi Strauss, the website that we can get in, find out more.
www.adelheid.ca.
Okay. I'd like to thank you much, Heidi, for coming on.
Thank you.
And this works premiere elsewhere, a DanceWorks presentation, and it runs September 25th. 327th at Harbourfront Theatre, and where else is that but at Harbourfront? Hey.
Can I just mention before we close just mm-hmm. the dancers who were involved in
the
show?
Oh, yes, you should.
I'm very lucky to be working with an incredible group of people. Molly Johnson, who's Toronto-based, Luke Garwood, Danielle Baskerville, Brendan Wyatt, and Mariah Brennan.
Okay. Well, thanks again. Coming up on the show, Gadfly, here on Evidence on CIUT 89.5 FM.
I am every
Hi, welcome back to Evidence, CIUT 89.5 FM. I'm Ted Fox. Well, we have with us now Apollonia Velazquez and Ophelia Cimbadino and their gadfly. That's what they're known as, gadfly. And there's a Tood, we'll go into that in a minute, Festival of Urban Dance Culture. Hi, welcome both of you.
Thank you.
Hello.
So, when was gadfly founded?
Whoa.
And
2008. Summer of 2008.
Mm-hmm. 13. Jeez. When you founded it, what was your raison d'être, as it were, for the festival, for the gadfly? We'll go into that first.
Great. What was it?
Oh, why did we found gadfly? we are actually originally from Montreal, and we've known and worked together for over 12 years now, and we ended up moving to Toronto 8 years ago and noticed the amount of talent that was in the city. I mean, amazing dancers, amazing potential, and yet barely anyone was, working professionally. Mm-hmm. And no one was really seeing urban dance in theater, here in Toronto at least. So our first project was basically bring all these people that we thought were amazing and actually create a show. Mm-hmm. And there was no specific plan for the future, but then everything grew from there.
Well, an interest in that culture has grown considerably since then, hasn't it?
Well, the interest has always been there. Mm-hmm. You can go to France, Japan, everywhere. I always tell those stories. It's massive. It's massive. Everybody likes it. Everybody, because it's addictive. You see, you get inspired when you see, I don't know, a young kid that's 12-year-old dancing with a 20-year-old and being head-to-head and have the same kind of skills, the same knowledge, or learning from each other, taking from each other. So it's addictive. There's nothing else you can say. So the interest has always been there. It's just in Toronto specifically. It just never was a foundation as a people working together to build something. It's just pockets of little things that were happening in and there, and then people, I don't know, they get caught up in life and they have to pay their bills. So, yeah.
But it's basically originated politically, didn't it? It's a reflection of the life of different communities, poor and elsewhere, they're expressing themselves, the real selves.
Yeah, I think if we speak urban dance as a group of dances, I think they all have their different history. So I think what's mostly known is, you know, history about hip-hop culture, but urban dance encompasses so many more styles. So hip-hop, house, locking, popping, I mean, there are so many. So they all, yes, of course, originate from one specific location, part of history, culture, but maybe all vary in how they developed.
Yeah, and the idea why we build this festival, so people realize that, hello, urban dance culture, it's a thing on its own. It has nothing to do, well, nothing, I don't want to say nothing, but by now it has mature enough to have its own identity, his own set of beliefs, things like that. So it's not so much about, like hip-hop was before, about graffiti, DJing, and all that stuff, and which I respect. I even tried it, and I even do some of those art forms, but urban dance culture is a thing on its own. Now it's easily comparable to martial arts. Like when you compare judo to aikido to jujitsu to kendo, they're all totally different. They come from different areas, but there's an underlying thing that gets them all together. Mm-hmm. It's the exact same thing with urban dance.
Mm-hmm. It's interesting because I'm finding urban dance movements and everything are popping into contemporary dance works that aren't urban dance based quite frequently.
Yeah, and that's like the festival that we do is try to put a stage so urban dance artists get the chance to grow or at least have a shot at having an audience that will see their work, whether they like it or not. At least you have a shot. As opposed to having to always label yourself as, oh, my stuff is contemporary, but there's some street dance in it, or blah, 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 blah. Just, you do urban, okay. Just put it on stage and
experiment.
And let's see what happens.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So, talk a bit now about the festival. When did it start? And
the festival is, this year is our fifth anniversary, actually. Wow. So, it's been 5 years. it started as a one-day short conference for about 5 hours, and now it's grown into a five-day festival. So a lot of the elements in it have grown. You know, it started as a panel discussion, workshop type of day, and now we have theatrical shows. We have a Skills and Soul Battle. We have the Gadfly Awards. We have workshops, panels. So, I mean, there are so many facets of the festival at this point. But, yeah, it's our fifth year.
Wow. Mm-hmm. And let's start then with the main companies that are involved. You guys, of course.
Mm-hmm. We always bring short work every year, but we have also from Toronto Alias Dance Project presenting a short work. And our guest company this year is from Montreal, choreographed by Alexandra Spicy Lande, and it's a work for five dancers.
Okay, can you talk a bit about each of those companies?
Yeah, so I'll start with our guest company, founded in Montreal. We've known her forever. She's also organizer of actually a really big street dance battle in Montreal called Bust a Move. She's been choreographing her own works for a few years now, kind of bringing street dance into theater in Montreal. And she's presenting an excerpt of a piece called Complex R, and it's a new work that she has. Well, she's actually never been to Toronto to perform her theatrical work, so that's
a
premiere
great.
Here in Toronto.
Yeah.
Aliens Dance Project, I mean, most of you must know them. Yeah. They perform, they do a lot of productions here in Toronto. And this will be a solo dance by Lauren Cook, and it's called Euphoric Abyss, choreographed by Philia. And then Gadfly is we're presenting a work called Etiquette, and it's a group, it's an ensemble piece.
Okay. I'm talking to Apollonia Velasquez and Ophelia Sinbadino, and they're talking about the TUD Festival of Urban
Dance
Culture.
I love it. Usually, I'm the one who gets corrected on my pronunciation. I like it.
It's September 24th to 28th at Winchester Street.
Yes.
And you had a pair of tickets to give away
for we do.
September 26th, right?
Mm-hmm, Friday.
And that's the Winchester Street Theater. That's mm-hmm. 80 Winchester Street in Toronto. And the number to call is 416-946-7000. 416-946-7000. Okay, let's go into this more.
Yep.
Everything that's in it, you have workshops and battles. Let's start with them, too, before we...
Okay, the battles. We call that... It's probably like the worst street dance battles that you can see.
The worst.
Yeah, we talked about that.
Body counts high.
Yeah, and because typical street dance battles... I'll give you some of the stuff, what happens, how it goes down. Usually they're either in a club or in the basement or things like that. And usually you would have, I don't know, 80, 90, 120, 200 people that would sign up to do it. So they would pay to do the battle. But only one person would get the prize at the end. It's the winner. It would be something ridiculous like $100 to $100.
Mm-hmm.
You do the math. So the people that are the show have to pay to be in. People that come and see those battles usually pay to be in. The environment is usually like crappy floors and things like that. And yeah, it's sometimes a bit political in the sense that you have to bring judges that have a lot of experience or that have been pioneers in the dances, so-called. Mm-hmm. So you have to fly them in, pay for all that stuff, and they're just to come and sit down and point to either side to the table to see this person won, this person won, this one's better. So we're bad because we have none of that. There's no OG judges. The participants are the judges. There is no dirty floor. We're doing actually in a place where people are used to see art. People are used mm-hmm. to see theater work. People go there to have a good time and also be inspired. So mm-hmm. that's what we're putting these artists. And also the people that are actually qualifying, those that make it to the qualifiers, and everybody that we bring as guests, they're paid to battle. So it's a professional battle. And it's curated because we selected those people. We go to events throughout the year everywhere from Montreal to Vancouver to everywhere, and we see we're fans of this culture, so we know a lot of the people in Canada that are doing this thing proper.
Mm-hmm.
All those people that have international recognition, but in Canada we don't recognize. Like, we always think, oh, the Americans are better, oh, Europe is better, Japan is better, but our point is that no, we have really good talent here. Let's put him in the forefront. So yeah, so we selected artists that we really look up to. I think they're really good.
Mm-hmm.
And that actually applies for the whole festival. So everyone teaching, performing, battling, award nominees, everyone is Canadian.
Great. Mm-hmm. Battles, by the way, seems to be a term that's coming into everything, all the arts, like poetry slams, writing slams, all this violent imagery. Like, how could a poetry slam turn?
It's not so much about the violence, it's about, because
the word itself.
Because when you go to those things, it's the spontaneity on the moment. Mm-hmm. It's like that thing, like only you that are present in the room witness and nobody else. It's not something that's YouTubeable. You're going to see in YouTube is not the same thing. When you see it live, it connects at one moment, the thing that happened to two people or you and the music, and you saw it and you see like 100, 200 people that are in the room and had the same
reaction
at the same time. Mm-hmm. That's the connection that those battles provide, or anything. We're the same thing for poetry or spoken word.
Now you have urban dance workshops at the Citadel, which is Coleman Lemieux, which is Dundas and Parliament.
Yeah. 304
talk about
Parliament.
That.
Yeah, we change the format. Usually we have two, three workshops and a couple of panel discussions and things like that. But we decided that we're going to change it a little bit. We're going to have one workshop, and Spicy is going to teach it because of, she's the guest choreographer, and she's going to teach it. She's very knowledgeable about hip-hop culture, hip-hop dances, and about street dance in general. She's been a pioneer in Canada for many, many, many years. She has basically she's the organizer of the biggest event that happened in Canada. This is what, 4,000 or 7,000 people that show up to see that battle.
Yeah.
And she knows a lot. She's seen everything. So when she comes, she not only teaches moves, she brings a whole baggage of inspiration and energy that we want to have around. So we have only one workshop. It's going to be that one. And the other thing that we're going to do this year is going to be a Gadfly dance debate.
Speaking of battles.
Yeah, because there's two things that the reason why we started this festival, the main reason at the source is two things that in urban culture that are kind of like always iffy-wiffy, that's how I call it. They're very unambiguous in the sense, and there are street dance. Is it an art form? Is it not? Should it remain about the basics, about the foundations of every style? Should it be so almost considered like a folkloric kind of thing, dance? Should it remain like that, or should it evolve? Should it change? Should we allow it to merge? Should we allow it to just take and remix? So that's one of the things that what we did it for, and what we're gonna have an event debated. And the other thing is it possible that you can make a career as a dancer in Canada?
And specifically as an urban dancer.
And we believe right now, no, but I think it could and it should. But it would only happen if people start working together, like I told you earlier, is like have some organized synergy among artists to make it happen. So those are the things that we want to talk about.
So that dance debate is on Wednesday, and then the workshop is on Thursday.
Okay. Now, where can they go find more information? Just gadfly.ca, right?
They
can go on gadfly.ca or the actual festival website, tuds.ca, T-U-D-S.ca.
Okay, great. Yeah. Okay, then we've been talking to Apollonia Velasquez and Ofelio Zimbardino, and it runs September 24th to 28th. Did those tickets go away? The tickets, okay, there's still a pair of tickets for September 26th at the Winchester Street Theater on 80 Winchester Street. And the number to call, 416-946-7000, 416-946-7000. I'd like to thank Lindsay Ann Coles for coming on, for phoning in and getting the tickets for Elsewhere. Well, thanks again, guys.
Thank you.
Coming up, Melanie Rawson here on CIUT. 89.5 FM.
Right here, right now. Every day, CIUC 89.5. The sound of your city. Toronto.
Well, here we are again on Evidence on CIUT this Saturday, September the 20th, 2014, which soon will be 2015. Would you believe, Melanie, it's going to be 2015 in how many months? Wow.
Yeah.
And you are a holistic psychotherapist and educator, and your name's Melanie Rosen.
Rosen.
You.
Yep.
And you're going to be here to talk about various things connected with your movement therapy and some workshops upcoming. And welcome to the show.
Thank you so much, Ted.
Now, you've had a background like one of our previous co-hosts, Kathleen Ray, who you know, has in ISIS. And can you talk a bit about that?
Sure. Well, ISIS...
And not to be confused.
Yeah, my connection with Kathleen Ray is through ISIS Canada. Yeah, not to be confused with the terrorist organization. But related to the goddess of healing.
Exact opposite.
The Egyptian... Well, it's interesting, right? All these connections. So we'll see what plays out. Anyway, that's probably another show.
Yeah.
But so... ISIS Canada is a three-year diploma program in expressive arts therapy, and I also studied at the European Graduate School in Switzerland, connected with ISIS, and that's where I did my master's degree. My connection with Kathleen is we both have a love for movement, and so everyone who comes into expressive arts therapy and has... usually a bent towards one or more of the arts. So we use poetry and music and movement and drama, and all of the arts are interwoven to facilitate a therapeutic process for different people. Clown also became a part of that for me. So, yeah, but my gateway originally is through movement and the body, I would say even still, through all of my work.
Now, how does ISIS approach movement? I guess that would be something that would have influenced you through the years, too.
For sure. Yeah, so the way that ISIS approaches movement is through more of what would be understood, I think, as authentic. Well, okay, let me say there's a lot of different ways that it can approach it, but fundamentally it sees movement as a kind of way to looking at the powerful connection between the body, mind, and spirit, and how body and mind are connected through each other, and looking at, you know, why do various pathologies show up in the body, how exploring what is the relationship between the body and the mind, and how does that affect our well-being, how can we shape our world, or how do our emotions connect with our physicality? Can that physicality be used as a tool to understand ourselves, become more self-aware?
Your workshops, I guess this is a good point, your approach when you have a client, how do you initially, when they get them started in movement therapy for themselves, to the healing?
Well, I think the thing that attracts me about therapy is that it's never the same, and it's very much dependent on who I might be working with.
Mm-hmm.
I've worked all across the life spectrum, from babies to seniors, and with people who are hospitalized, with people who have a special need like autism or Down syndrome or behavioral issues. So that's really going to determine how I might approach. I think how I approach people is how they're coming to me.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
And then we start from there.
And so through discussion about what their problems are, both psychologically and physically, because all these elements
come
in.
I mean, it could be. If somebody if somebody is aware on that level and they're able to explore on that level, then I would start with them. I'm not saying level, but with that understanding. For example, another group that I did this week was for the Association for Community Living with Adults Who Have Developmental Intellectual Disabilities. So, for example, in that context, I was doing a combination of music, movement, and yoga. And now that's really not going to look like a yoga class, a conventional yoga class at, for example, at Shivananda Yoga, because those people have different needs mm-hmm. or different capacities.
Mm-hmm. Now, you have a certain yoga style, right, that you teach?
I trained in Kripalu yoga.
And how would you describe that yoga as opposed to others?
Kripalu, the meaning of Kripalu is compassion. Mm-hmm. The training of it was in the United States in Massachusetts. Mm-hmm. And so Kripalu is really being compassionate to the body. I would say what defines Kripalu yoga is that it's a process of exploration, so really being in dialogue with one's own body, as opposed to just to moving through a sequence. It can be creative. I tend to be very playful, that works well for me. Because
that's why you block capitalized play in your background.
Play is the
focus of your whole approach.
People say, oh, you do so many different things. You know, you work with children teaching creative dance, and I was on Manitoulin Island doing a summer camp for a First Nations community, integrating movement and drama and mm-hmm. storytelling and puppetry, or I would do a dance class for women called Global Groove, yoga, and the therapy. For me, I approach it all in the spirit of play,
mm-hmm.
Because not play as in, oh, it's happy, but with a curiosity and a lightheartedness, because I think that we can go a lot deeper with ourselves when we have a sense of humor, and when we have we drop the ideas about what's right or wrong, or I can't do that, and that's a lot of where I might start with somebody, is that, you know, so many people have this idea that they're not a dancer, or they're mm-hmm. not a painter, or mm-hmm. they can't play an instrument, but really, so my focus is on play. And everyone can play, and that's our nature, is that we are inherently creative beings. I see everything as a dance and a story and a poem.
Mm-hmm. It's interesting, because I don't know which choreographer we had on that said something like, children have all the art forms embedded in the body when they're exploring and seeing the world. They're both dancers. They're artists, they're writers, they're everything. It's all in one. And then for something happens as we get into the capitalistic world, and they're all segregated into different forms. They're out of touch more and more with what they're capable of. And then as they become more and more seniors, and this used to be very strong in the past, mm. the seniors would rediscover crafts and making the arts and everything after their life was coming down. And I thought, well, that was very interesting.
It is really interesting, and I think it's really significant as to why pathology does arise, is that we, you know, what I found was, even though I was coming into expressive arts therapy through movement mm-hmm. as the base, because the body is the main instrument, and originally, in using all of the arts, like visual art and poetry and drama, that's play in its essence. So for adults, that becomes expressive arts therapy. And Daniel Stern, who's a child developmental theorist, he talks about that very idea of us becoming separated, like, and we develop language. Mm-hmm. It's around the time when we develop language. So before, it's all in the body and the expression is whole. And then somehow you know, there is a sadness and a longing because that fullness of expression that we are naturally born with and that we're capable and that helps us to heal and is sort of bracketed off into the mind, the intellect. And we forget about the intelligence that lives in other places, mm-hmm. within ourselves. And mm-hmm. So, yeah, I think that's why I started to call myself a holistic psychotherapist and educator, because I'm really working towards bringing people more into mm-hmm. their innate whole capacity for mm-hmm. exploring their life.
But that's difficult in an urban culture where, like as you see in Toronto, all the development, destruction of parks, destruction of the past and everything, it's very difficult, isn't it, to get back to this, because our natural environment is being, what we're born into, is being sort of destroyed gradually too into the mechanical, computerized, digitalized lifestyle.
That's right.
And that turns the body into a machine, and it turns out for a distance from the emotions. And also, the other factor is when you look at medicine and everything, it divides the liver, heart, everything. You treat this, this when it's all a part of the holistic,
right.
Which is what you're trying to do with the energy flow and everything to what you're doing.
Yes, and I do use, I mean, I am a healer and I use Reiki and energy. I've always experienced myself that way and other people. And I think what you're bringing up is very relevant because that disconnect is part of that disconnect with ourselves as an extension of a part of being a part of the earth. And when there's that disconnect, which is culturally specific, because it's mm-hmm. not the same in all places, which is why I've been fascinated by, with traveling and studying arts, ritual, and healing in various cultures that still have that connection more intact, I would say. But as you notice that we do live in an urban environment, and I mean, it's very apparent that we're not able to, the more we tune in to iPods and computers and mm-hmm. you know, which we all these tools, but the less sort of we're connected from being, and people talked about this in the present moment throughout the show, which I think is why the present moment for me is bringing it back to awareness. And so I think that we're trying to inhabit ourselves more fully, be more present in this container, in this body. And that's why for me, increasingly for my own practice, daily practice, and is meditation through movement,
right.
And using movement as a tool to really live inside our own bodies and understand our own bodies and have a dialogue with them. Because and so what I do is I provide that space for people to explore and come more into contact with their own innate healing capacity. Because once people return into nature, we hear many stories about people who are become very ill and then they go into a quiet nature setting and slowly, slowly, they're able to listen again. Mm-hmm. They're able to listen to themselves. So it's about tuning in.
Okay. Now, you have some workshops that people can still register for?
Yes, I do. I have a class. I do, like I said, I do work all across all ages. People can contact me at any point because I facilitate every kind of class and experience for children, for adults. So if people are interested, they can have a look at my website, and all the information is there. It's www.creativerootsplay.com. And I have two classes coming up. You have the paper in front of you, so it, or I have three
I think it's September 23rd.
This week, all the classes
start on September 23rd.
And everything else, yeah. So anyway.
Where are they? What part of the city?
I'm in the West End around Roncesvalles and Dundas area.
Okay.
So, yeah, I have yoga starting and a movement class and a classes for babies. And just after this interview, I'm going to do a child's birthday party.
Great.
So
okay. Well, any other thing you'd like to add? No?
I think we've done it. That's it. Yeah.
Okay. Play. That's a key word of all this.
Yes, it is.
Anyway, thank you very much, Melanie, for coming on. Melanie Rawson and the Creative Arts Therapy. You're the director of.
That's right.
Great.
Yeah.
I'd like to thank Apolonia Velasquez, Ofilio Sinvadino, about the Urban Dance Festival, and is running at the Winchester Street Theater and with workshops at the Citadel, etc. And you just go on to gadfly.ca for more information, and Heidi Strauss about her show Elsewhere, which is running September 25th to 27th at Harborfront Center Theater. And you just go to www.adelheid.ca. And I'd like to thank Oren and Ariel on tech. And next week, we will be talking to dancers from the upcoming production of Pro Art to Dance. And we'll also be talking to a few dancers, choreographers from Nuit Blanche, which is already here. Seems like only last year I was at Nuit Blanche.
I love it.
Great. you have been listening to Evidence, CRUT 89.5 FM.